You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome to our first edition of D-Backs Hot Stove for this winter. I'm Mike Farron, and the D-Backs heading into the winter trying to improve on a surprising 85-win team from a year ago as they try to make it back to the postseason for the first time since 2017. Lots of conversation coming up every couple weeks here on D-Backs Hot Stove. Today we'll have a roundtable discussion with Nick Pecoro from the Arizona Republic, two writers from The Athletic, Dennis Lynn, who covers the San Diego Padres, Andy McCullough, who's based in Los Angeles, is one of their national baseball writers, as we look at the industry as a whole. We'll also visit with Jeff Passan from ESPN, and we'll talk a little bit about what the D-backs could do in free agency this year. But first, we had a chance at the general manager's meetings at the Omni Monte Lucia in Paradise Valley to visit with the general manager of the D-backs, Mike Hazen. What have you determined are the main focuses for improving the roster for 2020 this year?
I think there's a couple different areas. I think where our free agents are naturally will create some holes. Trying to figure out what the best mix is between the infield and the outfield for Cattell will create some variance in how we're looking at our roster. I think we're always going to have to pay some attention to the bullpen. I think from a starting pitching standpoint, we're in a pretty good spot, but there'll still be opportunities to add, I would imagine, in some pieces. So we're looking at the entirety of the roster and ensuring that we're adding and improving in every way we can.
So it's safe to say that most of the focus comes on the offensive side. What would you like to do in terms of adding? I know we talked about this a little bit at the end of the year, but where are those spots that you feel like you need to find upgrades offensively?
Yeah, I think offense is fair, at least is one of the main priorities. I think adding consistency to that group. I don't think it's necessarily focused on power. It's not necessarily focused on I think on base is certainly something that we should look to improve in terms of its consistency day to day. Those would be the main areas. I mean, what position those find themselves in, I'm sort of indifferent to. We have enough flexibility on the roster that we can make a lot of choices given the defensive versatility we have on the team.
So is one of, I guess, first and foremost, do you try to add impact? Are there ways, do you think, whether it be financial flexibility or through prospects or free agency, whatever it is, that you can add impact offense this winter, or is that something that's further down the line?
Oh, I hope so. I mean, I hope we're always striving to add impact in various ways, and I think, whether it comes on either side of the ball is certainly we're sort of indifferent to. But I do think adding impact offense is a potential for doing that. I don't know what form it could take it in, but I think there is. But we'll see.
With that, I mean, one of the things that I know is a focus for a lot of teams is adding depth. So how do you balance that in knowing that you want to be able to have as much quality major league depth? You've got some prospects that are coming too, but in trying to give Torrey as many options as possible, but also if there is an injury, making sure that there's not a drop-off in play.
Well, I think number one is I hope that depth that we have internally is getting better and getting closer. And there should be a decent amount of it if we're doing our jobs the right way. And then we'll always look to build external depth as best we can. But I would hope that during this season that there is a group of players that are coming up through our system that are going to start to really provide that.
What's the key to building on the 85-win season from a year ago?
I think adding consistency to the bullpen again, but I don't think that's necessarily from its its composition last year or its performance. I thought they were okay. We're always looking to improve. I think offensive consistency is probably one of the bigger areas that we need to continue to maximize, as well as maintaining our ability on defense.
So you already mentioned that as being on base is one of the things, but you guys cut the strikeout rate pretty significantly last year too. Is that one of the focuses in whatever acquisitions you are, is that finding guys that make more significant contact more regularly?
Yeah, I think contact was something that we certainly focused on. I don't think it's at the expense of everything else. I think power is a component, on base is a component, but I think I just think that offensive consistency from an on-base standpoint overall, and then continuing to add as many good hitters as we can, is going to be important.
From the bullpen, how much different is the strategy this winter with more flexibility than it has been the last couple?
I don't think it's going to be incredibly different in the bullpen in terms of what we have a lot of good back-end options. So that's been something we've had, but I would imagine we still look to add more.
One significant move in the coaching staff this winter in adding Matt Hergis from the Giants organization. Read a little bit and heard Matt talk about how he's been up to speed technically on some of the changes in baseball. What were your impressions in the interview process that led you to feel like he was the right fit as all of baseball is transitioning?
Yeah, we felt like his ability to connect and develop relationships was exceptional. We believe strongly in that. We think it's a skill that we want to continue to enhance. We felt technologically he has a very good understanding from it. I think he's been through a couple of organizations recently that have implemented it in both at the minor league and major league level, and that the transition on that would be fairly seamless. And, you know, like anything else, we're looking to, you know, have impact coaches anywhere we can.
Mike Hazen, D-backs GM at the general manager's meeting. So what could the D-backs do specifically this weekend? We had a chance to visit with ESPN national baseball writer and expert on trade rumors, Jeff Passan. Kind of curious, what's your take on what should be an interesting winter? The team hasn't gotten a whole lot of attention nationally, but they have a lot of potential for moves.
Yeah, it's a team, honestly, that doesn't have a whole lot of holes either. And that's the thing, when you're looking up and down that roster, they have versatility in a lot of places, whether it's Ketel Marte, who can play in center field or second base, whether it's Josh Rojas, who can play pretty much everywhere around the diamond. Corner outfield is going to be a spot that they're looking to fill. Relief pitching is going to be a spot that they're looking to fill. And thankfully for both of them, they're pretty deep areas for free agents this offseason at the price point that the Diamondbacks are looking for, because right now they're, after shedding $34 million a year from Zach Greinke, they're not looking to fill that hole with a Gerrit Cole or an Anthony Rendon or Steven Strasburg or even a Zach Wheeler. They're looking to play more in that mid-range free agent.
Okay, so as we look at mid-range free agents, obviously defense is something that's big. They weren't as good against right-handed pitching as they were against lefties a year ago. What stands out as being a potential when you start talking about corner outfield?
I mean, you look at a guy like Cole Calhoun with the Angels last season, hit 30-plus home runs. He was terrible the year before, but really rebounded, changed his swing, has always been electric in the outfield, has one of the best right field arms in all baseball. And he's a guy who fits, who makes sense financially, but he's going to have a lot of suitors. And that's the thing about guys like that. You know, there are going to be teams lining up for him. And the question for the Diamondbacks is he going to fit in at the price they're looking to pay?
The other part with him is there's a local angle, because he's from Buckeye and grew up here and lives in the Valley, went to ASU. So you wonder if that plays a factor at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to, at least in some part. And you talk to players all the time. They want to not just do spring training in Arizona. They want to live in Arizona. It's a really appealing place for players to be, and understandably so. If you can live here year-round, I mean, I know free agents who would take less money to go to the Diamondbacks just because they're able to stay in their home every night.
That's really interesting, too. And you start to look at the number of guys who live here. That certainly fits. What about on the trade market? Because we were talking about this in a roundtable as well. There's a lot more depth in the organization than there has been over the last several years. Mm-hmm. And they want to continue to compete even while they're building that up. They're not going to take a year off. So when it becomes the right time to deal? Is this a right time potentially to deal? Could there be somebody that has an impact on their roster via trade?
I'm not sure if it's the right time to deal at this point. I look at a guy, this is a funny name, I look at a guy like Mitch Haniger, who is going to be generating quite a bit of trade interest. Now, are the Mariners, he has been with the Diamondbacks, are the Mariners inclined to move him? Does he fit in with the Diamondbacks at this point? He's right-handed, like you said, coming off a very unfortunate, we'll call it, injury. And when he's out there, though, man, is he productive. He can play center field, so if you want to put Marte at second base, against if you have a left-handed or right-hand lineup. There are a lot of different things you can do there. And that's the beauty of Ketel Marte. It's not just that he's a 7-win player. It's that he's a really versatile 7-win player. And that is the kind of guy around whom a contending team can build. And it's weird to think that, because coming into last season, who's Ketel Marte? You know, maybe he'll be okay. No, he is a franchise type player who's under contract for, I believe, six more years.
Yeah, I think it's five more with the options, and coming off a 3-win season, as you pointed out, put together a 7-win. Just real quick on the rest of the division, we haven't seen the Dodgers go gangbusters in a number of years. We know the Padres are kind of up against the limit. Rockies up against the limit. Giants want to stay competitive. What's the landscape look like for the rest of the National League West this offseason?
I'll go from bottom to top. I don't think the Giants are going to be competitive this year. And they just hired Scott Harris as general manager, brought Gabe Kapler in. This seems like a retooling year for them for certain, where it's not going to be a complete teardown. But if they could trade some of their veterans, they would like to do that. The Rockies are in a really weird place. And the Rockies need to be creative. And the idea of being creative could involve trading one of their really good players, potentially on the left side of the infield, which is odd to think about and odd to say. But if you want to start over, then go on the fly. You know, Trevor Story is a free agent in 2 years. Nolan Arenado can opt out in 2 years. And suddenly the Rockies look a whole lot different than they do now, so they may want to cash in those chips. The Padres are, to me, the most curious team in baseball. Because for years they have built up this farm system that was supposed to be great. And Fernando Tatis Jr. is great. And Chris Paddock is great, or has a chance to be great. And Manny Machado is great. But they need more. And they do not have it right now. And if they're not going out and spending in free agency, what are they going to do? Are they going to go trade some of those prospects? And are the guys they trade potentially going to be the ones who would have been part of the core? The Dodgers are... You know, I had someone tell me last night, the Dodgers are the best-run organization in baseball right now. Between the amount of money that they have, their major league roster, and their prospects, they have the ability to do just about anything. They can sign big free agents, whether it's Gerrit Cole or Anthony Rendon. They can trade for top-tier players, guys who are getting MVP votes. Or they can go and plumb the lower levels of the free agent market like they have so successfully. And so they've got a number of maneuvers, and as good as shape the Diamondbacks are in, and I think the Diamondbacks within the next 3 years are going to be one of the five best teams in baseball, your eyebrows raised right there. I think you agree with me on that, and let me tell you guys, Mike's not being a homer if he says that, because it's absolutely true. The talent that they have in the minor league system and at the big league level right now positions them, if they play things intelligently, to be a powerhouse with staying power. And the only thing that's standing in their ways is a team with twice the payroll and the same sort of acumen for gathering talent.
Yeah, it's the key is finding the ways that you can create advantages for yourself that to compete with a behemoth like the Dodgers. But I do think that that's part of the joy of the challenge of what they're trying to build here with the Diamondbacks. So, Jeff, we appreciate the time. It's great to see you.
Always great to see you, Mike.
Jeff Passan wasn't the only writer that was here in Phoenix for the winter meetings, and a chance to sit down with three prominent baseball writers to talk a little bit about what the winter will look like overall for Major League Baseball and specifically for the D-backs. We're very pleased to be joined by Nick Pecoro, who covers the Diamondbacks for the Arizona Republic, Dennis Lynn, who covers the Padres for the Athletic, and the Mark Carrig of the West, Andy McCullough from the Athletic, who is one of their great feature writers. And Andy, I'll start with you. In looking at the way the landscape has evolved over the last 3 years in the way off seasons go, what do you think that means for this coming winter?
Thank you. It's great to be here with the David Vassay of the desert.
I think it's...
Does Steve actually work for the team?
He doesn't work. I mean, no one could describe what he does as work. I think the way the last four winters, like basically every winter since 2015 is like really problematic for the sport. And so I don't really see a reason this year is going to be different. It's sort of, for lack of a better you know, way to phrase it, guilty until proven innocent. I mean, teams have shown a lack of interest in spending, a lack of interest in long-term commitments, a lack of interest in sort of being aggressive and getting things done, you know, earlier in the winter. I think some of that obviously is a corrective to, I mean, if you look at the winter of 2015, there's a lot of bad contracts, you know, that the teams are trying to get out from under. But I think we've seen an overcorrection that has calcified the market, and there's no indication this year is going to be different, and I think that's just a negative for the sports perception.
And look, two of the three biggest free agent position player contracts the last two offseasons have been signed by the Padres. They were both signed late, Dennis, but so that's the one team, you cover the one team that kind of has spent. Was that more opportunistic, or was some of that by design?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the teams they were bidding against, the Kansas City Royals, Andy's Kansas City Royals with Eric Hosmer, and Manny Machado came out of them in the White Sox. I think, yeah, there was a lot of opportunism here. So I think if you're looking for the Padres to continue spitting in that realm this offseason, that probably will be a stretch because they're looking for starting pitching, and there's a lot more competition than there is for that, than there is for a first baseman or, you know, a third baseman even. But, yeah, I think that the Padres are in an interesting spot because they want to win now, but they're also, we were talking about this earlier, they have a interesting payroll management structure that we can see right now. So if they want to continue to spend, I think that's probably a long shot, but they have shown more willingness than some teams in the past.
Well, they're one of those teams that's kind of, they're in an important spot where they have to start showing that they're competitive pretty soon. We have a couple teams like that. Now you also have a few teams like the Diamondbacks that have decided that they're not going to go through a full rebuild. The Giants decided that they're not going to go through that. Does that impact the landscape in your mind at all, Nick?
Well, I mean, I guess it's kind of a counter to what Andy was saying. I think he's right that there's some guilt, you know, until proven innocent. But, you know, you look at the Padres, that looks like a team that's kind of ready to ramp it up and ready to kind of there's some pressure on the front office to win. I think you can say that about the Phillies. I think you can say that about the Angels. I think you could say that about the Reds. You know, the White Sox, you mentioned, were a team that were in on Machado, you know, fell short. Are they going to be motivated to sign somebody big and make a splash? That does make me want to be hopeful that the offseason will move a little bit quicker. But I guess I'm not convinced. Did you ask me a question about the Diamondbacks? I just kind of started.
No, I didn't. I didn't. I was just asking about it in general. I mean, I was talking about the way that you've seen the evolution of that. Because I think that's one of the more interesting parts of this is that the last couple of years there have been a large number of teams that have wanted to go through that full rebuild. And while we still have some like Baltimore and Miami, Detroit that are really in the depths of it, it does seem like there are some more that are getting closer to coming out of that should theoretically spur the market.
Yeah, I think teams have rejected, and fans really have rejected, a recreation of what the Astros did. Not that the results weren't, you know, well, let's talk about a team besides the Astros. What the Cubs did was definitively worth it, right? I think what you're seeing, though, is when two teams are doing that, three teams are doing that, right, it's easier to do it. When eight teams are doing it, you become like the White Sox, where you're just stuck in this permanent cycle, you know, the Marlins. And so a lot of teams are trying to replicate what the Brewers and A's have done, which is rebuild on the fly. And, you know, basically we're going to win 77 games for a couple of years, and then we're going to wake up, you know, and all of a sudden we're a 92-win team, and you're not really sure how it happened. That's the new model. But the problem for the labor force is that model doesn't involve really spending. You know, the way out of a rebuild is there's really two ways. There's either develop homegrown talent, which is hard, and then there's spend, which is kind of what the Nationals did, you know, to get out of their initial rebuild. In addition, well, they did both. I don't really know what I'm saying.
Sorry, neither do we.
It's, yeah. I guess I think you are right that teams aren't doing the full teardown because it sucks. It just sucks to watch. It would suck to have to execute, and it's hard. You know, it's hard. So I think teams are trying to kind of thread the needle the way the D-backs kind of are now, where it's like, we're going to win 85 games. Like, okay, well, now you're going to try and win 92? No, let's try and win 85 again and, you know, see where we're at. And, you know, and so it's kind of it's a little frustrating, but it's not like it's better than winning 60 for 5 years in a row.
You know, Dennis, you kind of watched that happen with the Padres, where they made all the big splashy moves. They brought in Justin Upton and Melvin Upton and Craig Kimbrell and made all these moves and then tore it down right away. And they've been stuck in that that abyss, really, for a long period of time. Do you think that the fact that there were so many teams that went into the process at the same time that they did had a negative effect on trying to do what these other teams did in rebuilding? Because at some point you lose the competitive advantage that maybe the Cubs and the Astros had by doing that.
Sure, I think there's an argument for that. At the same time, I think the Padres would argue they spent more in international that one year, 2016, than pretty much anyone else. We'll see if those investments pay dividends. But at the end of the day, they kind of went away from that model a little bit by signing Eric Hosmer. You could say that was kind of a deviation from the plan. They wouldn't say it is. And then Manny Machado is probably a much more sound investment from a rebuilding team's standpoint, just because he's younger, plays a premium position. But Eric Hosmer's kind of just – it makes the Padres weird. I don't really know how to describe exactly how they align with other teams. But I know they're of the mind that they don't want to be like the Rays or the A's who, win 90 games every year and get eliminated in the wild card game. They think they're building into something pretty big where they can be championship contenders every year. But we have to wait to believe it, because we haven't seen in the results yet.
Yeah, I mean, we hear that a lot with the Diamondbacks, Nick, with sustainable growth, right? They want to be a sustainable franchise, one that's competing every year. The farm system is on the rise. Maybe it's not to the level of where the Padres are. Andy covered the Dodgers for a few years. Their farm system is certainly very good. But at what point is the right point to start tapping into those resources, not to support your major league roster with those players, but to support them with players from other organizations? Because that's a huge part of building up a farm system, is being able to acquire talent from other teams.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably the answer is probably the opposite of what we've seen the Diamondbacks do so many times over the years, which is kind of try to force the issue before you're ready for it. I think you probably just kind of need to have a realistic viewpoint of what you are, how close you are, and whether the time is right to go and push in. I mean, you think back to the offseason of 2015, which was when they signed Greinke, and then they also made the ill-fated Shelby Miller trade. That was a pretty good team. It really wasn't a team that was like one or two pitchers off, as we saw, from being like a real championship contender. And I mean, I guess maybe you could make the argument that they were. They just picked one of the pitchers wrong. I think with them, that's what I would do, is I would want to be sure. I'd want to make sure that you don't repeat the same mistake that they've done over and over. Just try to get a sense for whether these guys are actually credible big leaguers before you start pushing those chips to the middle of the table.
Right, Nick always has a pretty conservative viewpoint when it comes to holding on to prospects, and I certainly understand that. I mean, that's, you want to be able to build from within, especially in the way that the budgets work in baseball, if you're in that middle to bottom tier. But does it start to make sense? I mean, Andy, you covered the Dodgers for a long time. Is there a window to try and push in against LA, or are they still a fully operational Death Star right now because they continue to churn players out of that?
They're like hegemony, they're going to, what is the year? Name me the year when they're not going to be the favorite to win the division.
It would be the first year that everybody gets hurt and they can't replace them, right?
But like coming into the season, is it going to be this year? Is it going to be 2020? No. Is it going to be 2021? No. 2022? Maybe if the Padres, they hit on all their guys, but they probably won't. Prospects don't work out all the time. So that's the problem, and I think a lot of teams look at it as what Dennis was saying, I get this idea, we don't want to be like the Rays and A's where we win 90 games and then we get eliminated. It's the Nationals won 90 games and then they won
the World Series.
And we're not going to sit here and say that the Nationals are infallible in terms of how they built that team. And it's not like they went for it at the deadline. But, there is some benefit to trying. And I think a lot of teams have lost sight of the value of trying. Let's try and win 88 games and see what happens, and you don't torch everything to get to 88 games. But if you're at 82 wins, let's spend some money. Let's maybe torch a prospect or two and try, give our fans a reason to actually believe in this team this summer.
Why not build a roster that has a chance to compete coming into the season? And I think that's kind of what the Diamondbacks are hoping to do, too. I mean, it stands in contrast. One of the things that always stood out to me about this year was Andy McPhail is the president of the Phillies, and he made a comment akin to, we're kind of in the middle of the pack at the trade deadline. Why push in when we're going to have to face the Dodgers in the first round? What happened to the Dodgers in the first round? Now, granted, the Nationals weren't necessarily your typical wild card team in that they could throw Max Scherzer and Strasburg and Patrick Corbin at you, but we are all of a generation where we learned that, you know, anything can happen in the playoffs because luck plays a disproportionate factor in short series. So why shouldn't teams try and get to that wild card game to put more of an effort forward, Dennis, and just trying to find a way to compete for a chance to win a championship? I mean, that's the goal, right?
Yeah, maybe the Dodgers being the Pirates division has something to do with their thinking there, but I think that's a very legitimate argument. You could say the Padres should go all in on a guy like Steven Strasburg, Gerrit Cole this offseason. I mean, their payroll's basically half of the luxury tax threshold, so I mean, why not go for it at some point? Like Andy said, there's no foreseeable future where the Dodgers aren't competing. So at some point, no one's come up with a good answer for how the Padres are going to topple the Dodgers and be that championship team in that division. So you got the Diamondbacks, who Nick knows are really smart. And, yeah, I don't know. It's a really good question. I think the Padres just have to spend more money.
Okay, so Nick, let's talk just a moment about the Diamondbacks and what they do. It does seem like the focus is offense and probably offensive depth. How many moves can they make to try and make this offense better and good enough to be as consistent as Mike Hazen would want on a nightly basis?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's probably a couple positions that stand out, right? The corner outfield, they didn't get an awful lot out of right field last year. You know, it didn't really go as planned, right? It was supposed to be Steven Souza with Adam Jones filling in here and there, but it turned out to be mostly Adam Jones and others. And then, you know, what are they going to do about second base and center field with Ketel Marte playing one position or the other? It sounds like from listening to Mike Hazen that he wants guys that, you know, first of all, get on base, guys that make some contact and are kind of just not going to be those, you know, guys that just get overwhelmed and are automatic outs and are strikeout machines, and guys that can kind of be able to manufacture some runs when things aren't going great. I don't really know that there's an awful lot of other positions around the diamond where they're, you know, certainly they can upgrade. They could probably upgrade at first base. You know, they could probably upgrade at, I mean, you know, Carson Kelly's the catcher of the future. They, you know, they could probably get a little more offense out of his backup. But there's really not that many other positions that you can look at. And their offense wasn't that bad last year. I don't think they really have. I don't think that's a huge issue, in my mind, at least.
Andy, is the market there for them to be able to improve offensively, to improve enough spots, both in the lineup and via free agency, to put together a lineup that at least is more consistent on a nightly basis to be able to compete with LA? There's no secret as to who they're chasing.
I think actually, no, because they're not going to spend. Like, I know this might get bleeped, but, like, they're not going to sign Gerrit Cole or Steven Strasburg or
anything. Yeah, but they're looking at offense. I mean, first and foremost, they're probably not going to sign Anthony Rendon. I think that's fair to say. But are there players via trade or free agency that make sense offensively that they could do that, where they could at least build what you said, that kind of team that you feel like has a chance going into the season, and if you want to push in and trade for J.D. Martinez at the deadline, you can get?
I don't know. I think this class is – the free agent class is kind of top-heavy. And also for the D-backs specifically, I mean, two of the better players are third basemen in Rendon and Moustakas. Mm-hmm. Donaldson as well. Yeah, Donaldson's actually, you know, probably the second best, you know, and then position player behind that is Yasmani Grandal is a catcher. They're set at catcher. So then you start to say, you know, Marcelo Zuna in the corner, Yasiel Puig in the corner. That could be kind of fun, huh? Puig in the desert. It's hard to envision them adding real impact talent because there's a limited pool and it's unclear if they're going to, you know, give an irrational contract.
I don't know that they're necessarily going to play in free agency, but they're going to be competing for some of the same offensive pieces as the Padres, it seems like, on the trade market. We already touched on some of the Padres issues. So what do you see the Padres doing? What are some of the things, Dennis, that they might be in competition for pieces with the Diamondbacks?
Well, left-handed bats, something they needed for a long time. I think the Padres do have a lot of currency with their minor league system. I know a lot of people say that's the best currency, but we're also seeing some GMs kind of shy away from prospects at the deadline most recently. So I think the Padres are in kind of a spot where you can argue everyone knows what they need to do, which is trade prospects. If they don't want to spend, you know, Gerrit Cole money, they need to move these prospects who have been in the system for a few years now. And I think other teams have had the chance to evaluate those guys too. So it's a really interesting place to be because you keep hearing about this farm system and how it's going to turn out major talent. But a lot of these prospects are blocked now and they need to be moved. So I think that's it's a major question mark for the Padres going into this offseason. And I think the way they maneuver it versus a team like, say, the Diamondbacks, it's going to be interesting to see how the rest of the industry values their prospects.
Thanks again to Dennis Lynn from The Athletic, Andy McCullough of The Athletic, and the Arizona Republic's Nick Picoro, to Jeff Passan for ESPN, and D-backs GM Mike Hazen for joining us on this inaugural edition of D-backs Hot Stove. We'll be having these every couple of weeks throughout the next couple of months. Our next one will come out right about Thanksgiving. Steve Berthume and I will talk a little bit about what's transpired in the offseason for the D-backs. We'll check in from the winter meetings in San Diego and right before New Year's as well, as we keep you abreast of what's going on with the D-backs this winter on our D-backs Hot Stove. And if news breaks, we will have emergency podcasts in this feed, so make sure you subscribe to the D-backs podcast on your favorite podcatcher of choice. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks with more D-backs Hot Stove.